As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Total Soccer Show Weekend Review. The FA Cup delivered plenty of magic, and the action was equal parts comedic and tragic. Man United triumphed against their fiercest foes as Liverpool's backline was left exposed. It was pure chaos as both teams went hard, and the dramatic late goalscorer got a silly red card. Elsewhere, Chelsea with their usual level of erratic. Man City's win was fairly automatic, and Hadji Wright left Coventry fans ecstatic. Yes, an American star helped a small team level up. Makes you think they shouldn't have messed with the US Open Cup. Elsewhere, Harry Kane continues to slay. Christian Pulisic had another great day, and the NWSL got underway. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, your friend and mine, Mr. Taylor Rockingwell. Hello, Taylor.
Hello, Ryan Bailey. I loved your introduction, as usual. Nicely done, my friend.
You're too kind. You feeling good today? Feeling ready to review that weekend, Taylor?
I am indeed. It was a fun weekend. I enjoyed it. My team won, and then my team won again. It was lovely.
Excellent double winnage for you.
Yes.
Joseph Lowry, how are you? Feeling winning? Feeling winning? That's not a question.
Can't relate, Taylor. Phoenix Rising dropped points away to Monterey Bay over the weekend. Sad days. But in general, Ryan, I also love that introduction, and I was wondering who was going to be the first to make a U.S. Open Cup jab. I had my money on me, but as it turns out, it was you, Ryan. Well done.
I got in there. Joe, did you make the trip to Monterey Bay? Wonderful aquarium down there.
Didn't, but I actually, I have heard only great things about the aquarium, and I would trust no one else's recommendations than yours, Ryan, so I've just been waiting for the Ryan Bailey seal of approval. Thank you for giving it to me.
Joe about to get suspended for betting on himself. I'm just throwing that out there. Like, that's very much not allowed, Joe, and I think the podcast police are going to be coming for you.
TSS's famous HR department's going to be all over me on that one.
Oh, boy, here we go.
They heard our pre-show conversation, and we're like, nah, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine, but Joe
betting
on himself, unacceptable.
Graham Ruthers here. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ryan. How are you? Did you have a good weekend? Whitewater rafting, according to your Instagram? Are you secretly doing like a challenge Ryan show for cable TV? One weekend, play guitar in front of 60,000 fans. Next weekend, whitewater rafting. What is it next week? Skydiving or something like that? Aquariums.
I had a wonderful weekend, Graham. Saturday, whitewater rafting. Sunday, doing my tax return. It was up and down. One was more fun
I'll skip
than the
that
other.
Episode yeah. on your cable show.
I would advise you to do so. Before we get on with the show, patreon.com/totalsoccershow for all our bonus content, including but not limited to Graham Ruthven, the aforementioned, ranking NWSL kits. Some nice ones out there.
Indeed, there are. Seattle Rain, I am quite warm on that one. The San Diego Wave shirt is nice. Are any of them as nice, though, as the new USA home and away shirts? I quite like them. I think they're good. They're certainly a big upgrade on the like weird Captain America World Cup shirts that they had. Weird.
Yeah,
still
I'd
weird.
Say so.
2 years on.
I would just like the Scotland one, correct?
No, the Scotland one's bad. You do. You said you quite liked it, though, Taylor, so...
I'm trying to figure out the rhyme and reason of what Graham likes and doesn't like. Because the Scotland one seems pretty standard to me, and yet hated by Graham.
Taylor, here is the issue. Mm-hmm. We have made Graham, we've appointed Graham the cultural tastemaker when it comes to kits. And his opinion is
It's like movie critics. After a while, you don't question it. You just accept it.
Okay.
I have done nothing but question since, what was it, that Manchester United kit that Taylor and I loved correctly and Graham and Ryan didn't love?
No,
Graham,
that
is when I lost 23% of my belief in your kit rankings.
Okay. So I've still got some
some cachet, just not as much as you used to.
Someone in the supermarket was wearing that kit, Joe, yesterday when I went in there yesterday afternoon.
Good.
I was going to go and talk about the game, but I thought, no, your taste is too bad. I'm not going to do it.
Was it Taylor?
It was, indeed. Why don't we talk about Manchester United? We had an all-timer. I'm going to call it that, an all-timer at Old Trafford here. Man United 4, Liverpool 3 after extra time. Man United, of course, finalists last year in this contest. They're back to Wembley for the semi-finals because we hold the semi-finals at Wembley. Woohoo. Liverpool's quadruple is over. Their dream of some kind of quadruple is over. But Taylor, this game had it all. Dramatic late goals, dramatic late misses. Last gasp winner where the goal scorer got a red card quite harshly. Victory via chaos we had here.
Which I did not see coming. When they were up 1-0, things were going well. When they were down 2-1 late in the game, it felt like, oh, okay, yeah, that's kind of about how the season has gone. So when it goes the way it does, then we get goals in extra time, which I know Joe Lowry never expects to see, and yet we got to see in this one, which is always very fun. It was a strange game. Jurgen Klopp very annoyed afterwards with some of the questions about why Liverpool's performance fell off in extra time. And I think on the whole, this weekend was a good reminder that players are human. And Liverpool having a lot of injury concerns and many different games being played, I think that has added up to some fatigue. I think we're going to talk about that when it comes to Atletico, maybe even Inter Milan as well. So the length of the season may be catching up with a few teams. And I do think Liverpool just had more tired legs in this game, Man United able to eventually get through and get the result.
Yeah, this was a complete classic that sort of defied expectation. Manchester United finished this match in extra time with a back four that included Bruno Fernandes as a centre-back and Antony as a left-back. And it was weird. I totally agree with that, Taylor, and with that conclusion. Man United in the second half, they completely dropped out of it after a first half where Man United played well and were the stronger team, but went into halftime 2-1 down. It was a weird, inconsistent performance by both teams, I thought. But if we're talking about all the intangible stuff, all of Roy Keane's favourite things, things like fight and spirit, Joe's favourite things, United, for all their weirdness, definitely edged it in that respect. They didn't do that thing that we've seen so many times this season. They didn't crumble. They did give Liverpool 2-1 at the end of the first half, which has been a trend for Manchester United this season. When they concede one, they concede two. But they did absorb a lot of blows. They were able to come back. And I just thought, my overwhelming takeaway from this game is, what a great game this was to watch. Two rivals, a knockout match. Also in the UK, this was on terrestrial TV because it was an FA Cup match, which means the audience was huge by UK standards. Like 9 million people watched this game live. So my mum messaged me about it afterwards. A couple of people today have been like, did you see the game yesterday? It was proper throwback stuff, even extending to Manchester United not being absolutely terrible and ending up with a win.
What? Just to clarify, what was your mum's analysis?
Good game. Did you see it? I'm like, Mum, you know what I do for a job. Like, of course.
Does she know?
I'm not sure.
Mine doesn't know mine. Anyway, Joe, as Graham said, the XI expected intangibles was high in this one. Are you able to make some order from the chaos for me? Is there anything you could tell me about what Man United did particularly late on?
So I think the most interesting points, really, especially for this comeback, start with Liverpool and then transition into Manchester United. So one of the things that I thought was particularly poor from Liverpool, and fans and reporters and everybody had very real reasons to question Liverpool's performance late in this match, I thought one of the worst parts of their game, and they had some good moments as well, was that they couldn't control it. Right? They have leads. They have two separate leads in this game. They go up 2-1. They go up 3-2. They have opportunities to control the game, which is something that Liverpool have very clearly gotten better at over the years. They've shifted away from the all-action, you know, heavy metal, high-pressing system where they still press, but they do keep much more of the ball now than they did in Jurgen Klopp's first season in charge of this team. They have the ability. We've seen it over and over again to control games. We did not see it in this game. Turnovers in bad spots, poor defense and sort of the last line on set pieces, attacking set pieces, rather, not even necessarily defensive set pieces, but allowing way too many transition attacks from Manchester United. And that's where my focus shifts then to Manchester United, who I thought were excellent, getting forward on the break, and not even just in transition, although we did see that plenty as the game, you know, got closer and closer to the final whistle, but also with some of their movement in possession. And we saw this on the first goal. Graham, this was like one of the best mixed sauce games I've seen in a really, really long
time.
Yes,
Joe, join the
club.
Scott
McTominay, Scott McTominay is good at very specific things. He is excellent crashing the box. He's decent under pressure, being able to turn and add some value in possession. But for me, where I always see Scott McTominay at his best is crashing the box as an auxiliary runner. And that is exactly what he did in this game. He was effective in the box. He was effective crashing in transition. In general, Manchester United were dangerous when they could throw numbers forward. That's the makeup of the squad right now with Garnacho and Rashford. When you have those players along with Hoyland in that attack, you're going to be more dangerous in transition than you are in possession. Yep. And McTominay was sort of like the nice little cherry on top of that in a very fun game for Manchester United.
I thought this was the perfect thesis statement on Scott McTominay as a player, because I agree with everything that you say there, Joe. He's a real threat making those late runs into the box, and he's not a bad ball carrier as well when he had space ahead of him. We see the pass, the assist for the Rashford goal. I thought his timing on that pass, it's actually slightly behind Rashford, but just waiting that split second more to make the pass, I thought was really smart. But then out of possession, when you play him as part of a midfield two, like Manchester United did in this game with Manu and Bruno Fernandes ahead of him, you leave yourself open in defensive transition. And there were a couple of moments where the entire Manchester United midfield was just missing. I posted a picture of it midway through the game in our Slack chat, where Liverpool had like an entire half of the pitch just to stride into. And that is the downside of playing Scott McTominay as a deep-lying central midfielder. That does happen. So my thing with McTominay isn't that he's the perfect all-round centre midfielder. He's far, far from that. I just think he deserves more credit for the role that he does play. And thankfully, Erik ten Hag has kind of been watching some Scotland games, I think, because this is very much the Scott McTominay that we get at international level.
Taylor, do you expect any of this Man United bravery and chaos to be carried forward over the next few games after the international break? Do you think that Erik ten Hag will take something from this game and apply it going forward?
I wish I had a good answer for you. I have no idea, because this team has just been so up and down this season. They've had really good results. They've had poor results. They've had good results that turned into poor results and vice versa. And this game, I feels like more of that, but then ratcheted up to 11. So I would love to see this be a building block. There are reasons for optimism. It's Rashford scoring, it's Anthony scoring, and then it's Ahmad coming on and getting the late winner. And it's three players that definitely needed the goals that have impressed in certain ways, but in, say, Anthony's case, have done the opposite of that. So it could be a turning point. It could also be a fluke result against a tired Liverpool team. That's the fan in me not wanting to go too far with it, but it did feel like the vibes were better. It was the loudest I've heard Old Trafford be in quite some time. We got a shot of happy Sir Alex Ferguson in the stands, which is definitely not a thing we've seen very often in recent memory. So it did feel like the vibes were better. We had the Ineos executives there too. Always a fun time to get to talk about a monumental win for a team and then talk about their new executives and ownership group and how happy they looked or didn't happy. Didn't happy they look. But yeah, I think overall it is a result that has to be a positive sign for Erik ten Hag, and it has to be something they can build upon. Just because to beat your rivals the way they did with game-changing moments in terms of the substitutions, in terms of getting results from players that he hadn't been, it does feel like a thing that he will point to when he's interviewing for his job in a couple months.
Yeah, I agree with that, Taylor. I think the biggest impact will be on the vibes and just lifting the moods around that club. I kind of struggle to pick anything footballing out of the bones of this match, just due to the way that it finished up. You talk about the substitutions there. It's worth highlighting the changes that Man United did make, because their changes off the bench in this game were Antony, Harry Maguire, Christian Eriksen, Mason Mount, and Amad Diallo. How on earth did that set of subs change this match? That should be Liverpool's punishment today. Just sat in a dark room while Klopp, for at least an hour, just reels off those names over and over again. Antony, Harry Maguire, Christian Eriksen, Mason Mount, Amad Diallo. Weird, weird stuff. Such a weird game.
Very strange. You look at Liverpool's bench, they have five come on as well. Harvey Elliott, Connor Bradley, Cody Gakpo, Konstantinos Tsimikas, and Bobby Clark. Three of the Man United players who came on, I think, are combined for over $200 million in transfer fees. I don't think that's the case for the Liverpool additions. So there is still a level of, like, I don't know what to make of those players coming on and that they were coming on at all, but they got the result, so it's all good and everything's fine. And don't take your shirt off is the other key important point we learned.
Yeah, don't indeed. I see that Bruno Fernandes afterwards said that's a stupid rule, and it is a stupid rule.
It is a stupid rule.
Your argument is diminished slightly when it's one of your players that's been sent off after scoring a winning goal.
I said that back when what's-his-face scored for Palmeiras in the Copa Lib final, when he runs the length of the pitch and does it, and then gets that second yellow. That felt totally like counter to the spirit of the game. I understand it's technically correct. It just feels wrong.
Yeah. What's his face letting down the what's his face name there?
He has a vaguely political name, as I recall. It's something strange. It's something strange. Graham's looking it up now. Fine. Graham, do it. Graham.
I can't remember his name either. It's not Endrick. It wasn't Endrick who scored, right?
No.
Come back to me.
Just to say, Taylor, Sir Alex Ferguson looking very happy at this game. I think he's got some residual joy from earlier this week. I don't know, Graham, if you caught this. The Cheltenham Festival, a horse racing festival in the UK, it's kind of like Kentucky Derby equivalent. For the first time ever, he had one of his horses win. And I don't think I've ever seen him as happy as he was when his horse won that. So it's been a wonderful week for Fergie, too.
That's fine. It is Kentucky Derby. If we're calling it a derby, you have to call it the Kentucky Derby.
Taylor, you are a man of the people. I was thinking the exact same thing as Ryan said that. I looked at you and you didn't have the anger in your eyes that I felt in mine. And so I was thinking I was alone, but I'm not. I love it.
Criticism accepted. It's the Kentucky Derby. There we are. Very good. Excellent.
That's honestly better.
Indeed. Tell you what's wonderful for USMNT, Joe. How about Coventry beating Wolves 3-2? Biggest shock of this round in the FA Cup. The goals in the 97th and 100th minute of this game. Hadji Wright getting the winning goal here. Getting a call up for the USMNT for the Nations League window after Josh Sargent's withdrawal as well, initially being overlooked. Good weekend for Hadji Wright, Joe.
Yeah, man, as good as this game was, the Manchester United-Liverpool game was slightly better, but you toss in the USMNT tie, and they are really, really close for me. This game was awesome, and I'll get to Hadji Wright in just a second, but to set the table, Coventry City 8th in the championship right now, Wolves 9th in the Premier League. There's a pretty decent-sized gap between where these two teams are in the English football pyramid right now, but Coventry City, they take a 1-0 lead in the second half. Really good energy, good pressing. They are having success getting in Wolves' grill in Wolves' own third and Coventry's attacking third and finding chances really inside the 18. A lot of good stuff to like from Coventry early on in this game, even into the second half. And then Wolves show the quality. They get back into the game in the 83rd minute, even take the lead in the 88th. And that go-ahead goal, it's still a go-ahead goal, even though that lead didn't last. That go-ahead goal was one of the goals of the weekend for me. I don't know if the rest of you guys saw this goal or not. Sustained build-up play from the back. They play right through Coventry City's press, and it felt like we'd been waiting for that to happen from this Wolves team for most of the match up until this moment. It's beautiful play. Then you get Nuri driving forward and finds Bueno for the 2-1 lead. But Coventry just don't quit. Like, Hadji Wright was bright all game long, playing on the left wing, which, Taylor, you and I have talked about before. That continues to be his primary goal, despite the fact that we saw him at the World Cup as a number 9 and that he's mostly been a number 9. He's sort of become this line-stretching, inverted left winger. And he played his role really, really well in this game. He plays the cross in that's then flicked to the back post, and then Ellis Sims finishes off in the back post to actually make it 2-2. And then Hadji Wright scores the winner in the 10th minute of stoppage time. It is a great curler to make it 3-2. Hadji Wright was brilliant in this game. Coventry City, in general, very, very good. They now play, it is Manchester United, in the next round. So we get the fun synergy there. And I am stoked now, even more so, to see Hadji Wright a part of this U.S. group. Sargent and Luca De La Torre both withdrawn from that squad, and instead we get Brendan Aaronson, who's back in the team as an injury replacement, and Hadji Wright as well. We'll see if Hadji can take advantage of this opportunity.
The Mark Robins derby in the FA Cup semi-final. Of course, Mark Robins scoring a goal that saved Sir Alex Ferguson's job back in the day. Mark Robins, who celebrated this the winning goal by Hadji Wright by screaming in the face of a 13-year-old ball boy, which he then later apologised for. So, stay classy, Mark Robins.
Yeah, very good stuff indeed. Coventry hosting Man United, Graham. It's like the 90s all over again. I'm excited.
You're loving
for
that
this. Oh, wonderful.
Walking header coming. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, very well done to Coventry getting into the FA Cup semi-finals, of course. Taylor's just informed us that it was John Kennedy, the Palmeiras player. I said Reagan. I was close.
I thought it was Reagan too. Kennedy Batista de Souza, known as John Kennedy.
Thank you very much for that clarification. Graham, unless there's any more on Coventry, should we go over to the Chelsea-Leicester game.
Yes, let's do it.
Let's do it. 4-2 to Chelsea this was, scoring twice in stoppage time. Two progress did Chelsea. So close to implosion. It nearly happened again for them. Leicester, who of course are top of the Championship at the moment, not in the best of form at the moment, but they are looking to bounce back to the Premier League. They gave Chelsea, Graham, a run for their money here.
They absolutely did. And in the second half, it really did feel like Chelsea were imploding. I said after the Brentford match that Chelsea fans were turning on Poch, and there was open revolt here again. Raheem Sterling suffered a lot of abuse, criticism from his own fans. He did take maybe the worst free kick I've ever seen in my life in the second half after he'd missed a penalty, and you had fans booing him and chanting, get him off, get him off. Then Pochettino subbed off Mikhailo Mudryk, and a lot of fans were unhappy at that and were chanting, you don't know what you're doing. So it's a weird situation with Chelsea right now with Pochettino, where obviously in the league progress has been slow or non-existent, but the Cups have been much kinder to them this season. They made the Carabao Cup final, now they're going back to Wembley for the FA Cup semi-finals, of course. But even in this game, there were just so many signs of Chelsea's frailties. They were cruising at halftime, 2-0 up. They had controlled much of the game. They'd missed a penalty. But opposition teams, they know they're always going to get a period against Chelsea because they just can't produce a 90-minute performance yet. And that's exactly what happened. The Disassi own goal is a disaster. That's an easy sentence to say. A disaster, maybe, you could say. But he smacks a back pass into his own goal where Robert Sanchez looks to be way too high out of off his line. And then from there, Leicester were able to impose themselves on the match. I thought Dewsbury Hall was really good in this period. He was absorbing the ball so well under pressure, finding passing lanes. Enzo Maresca, of course, a former Manchester City coach. You can see a lot of the Man City DNA in the way that they play, so I think they will be a good addition to the Premier League next season, assuming they go up. But then the red card happens and that changes the dynamic of the match again. But even after that, it was a basketball game for the last 20 minutes. It's just that ultimately that suited Chelsea with the kind of transitional players they have.
Graham, I don't disagree with anything you've said, and I think it's a fair summary of the game. I think it's a fair summary of events. I do disagree with the way Chelsea fans feel a little bit, because in this game, you went through it really quickly, but it's Sterling missing a penalty, and it's a poorly taken penalty. He also has the very bad free kick. But even the Disassi own goal, watching it again, I forget the Leicester player who's applying pressure, but it's basically just that as he goes to hit the back pass, the player times the body perfectly. So they put the kind of shoulder into the shoulder, and so he's off center when he hits that pass. And you can see that it changes the physics of where he's trying to play the ball. He's trying to play it right to Robert Sanchez, who is admittedly way off his line. But it's basically just that sort of 50-50 shoulder barge puts him the wrong way, and so it's a really unfortunate own goal, but it's an unfortunate own goal, and then it's Raheem Sterling missing a penalty. It feels like in another world, this finishes 5-1, 6-1, and it doesn't, obviously, and Leicester do have the two goals. They do pull it back, then the red card changes things again. It just feels a little bit to me like if you are picking a game to be really mad at your manager for, or as further evidence that your manager isn't having a result, I'm not sure this is the one I would agree with.
I accept that, but I think it 2-2, Chelsea fans have seen so many of those games get away from them that they maybe didn't anticipate Chelsea turning it around again. So it's a little bit like once you've committed to the bit, matter the scoreline, you have to continue the bit for the rest of the match. So they've decided they're anti-Pochettino, and it doesn't matter what happens now. That is their stance.
Did you get a sense of what the full-time whistle was like? Was it just sort of a like, okay, all right, we got through this one fine, like a gentle golf applause?
I think that's the Stamford Bridge atmosphere generally. Chelsea fans raging at this podcast now. The reception, the atmosphere for the third and fourth goal is pretty raucous, especially because of the way that those goals are scored. Like, they're quite kind of hard-running transitional goals, counter-attacking goals. Noni Medueku scoring a nice one there. But, I think Chelsea fans, it's going to take a lot of convincing to change their opinion now on Pochettino, which is a shame, because I think while this season has been obviously disappointing, certainly in the league, I can see the building blocks, and like, it's a young team that they've got, so I would implore them to stick with Pochettino. I've always been a little bit biased. I like Mauricio Pochettino, but yeah, this season has been testing, I admit.
It's a young team, all of whom are on 10-year contracts, so they've got time to build.
And those building blocks are made of jello as well, which is not helpful. Graham, Potts said something interesting after the game. He said, Chelsea supporters do not need to trust me, but you should, quote, trust the club. And that is after he got those chants of you don't know what you're doing at him. why would you trust the club based on everything they've done? Like, surely trust the coach more than the club. It seems an insane way of looking at things. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, strange message. It should have been trusting me like the snake in Jungle Book.
That's right. That went well. Leicester, also, by the way, facing a points deduction for alleged breach of Premier League rules on profit and sustainability. So that might be coming for them. They might actually start next season in the Premier League with a negative points tally. And on that note, we should probably add, just before we came on to record, Nottingham Forest have been confirmed to have had a four-point deduction for those same rules. That's 2 points less than Everton were given.
Do we think anyone will have... positive points tally for the start of next season?
Man City will probably be given bonus points for being so good for sustainability.
Yes, of course,
I imagine.
Of course.
They'll get a head start.
As an apology for their many accusations, they're going to be given, 112 points to start the season, or 114 or whatever it is.
That's right. That's
how many
right.
of those negative four points taken away, we're just going to assume that they're going to blame Gio Reyna for that? Is that also Gio Reyna's fault? They're going to put that on him too?
Why not? Yeah.
All right.
They'll say that they are being hamstrung by those 4 points, Taylor. Don't love it either.
I don't
Man City 2, Newcastle 0. Let's go there, shall we? Bernardo with a brace in a comfortable win in the rain. Man City, the first side in FA Cup history to reach 6 consecutive FA Cup semi-finals. Mm. Treble still on, Graham.
Indeed it is. We had an exhilarating weekend in the FA Cup. We had 3 classic matches, and then we had Manchester City, who did what Manchester City do. This was very comfortable from them, sort of cruise through the match. I know that isn't too surprising given the strength of these two teams, but Newcastle used to be one of the very few opponents who could really disrupt City, looking back at the last couple of seasons, and they just weren't able to do that at all here. There was even a clip after the match where Pep is talking to Eddie Howe, and it looks very much like he says, you don't usually play like that. Now, in his defence, he's not having a dig. I think he's genuinely wanting to start a conversation about Newcastle's tactics, but there wasn't a lot of intensity about Newcastle's performance. There's not a lot of intensity about them in general right now. They're quite passive at the moment. So, yeah, City were clearly the stronger team. Just a quick note on something interesting that City did in this game. They started Mateo Kovacic alongside Rodri in central midfield, and we've spoken about how City, especially since Haaland has come into that team, how they've become a side that's willing to go a bit more direct, and they have a bit more verticality to their play, and obviously they're still a possession-based team. But in this match, it really felt like they had that midfield base to completely control the game. It felt a little bit like old Manchester City in the way that they controlled this one. That pairing of Rodri and Kovacic, they completed 293 passes between them, which was as many passes as Newcastle completed as an entire team. City finished with 72% possession. It was 75% in the first half, so that gives you a hint of how this match panned out. And yes, some of this was down to the way Newcastle set up in the back five and they invited pressure on top of them, but this was about as conventional as Pep gets with his setup, and it worked for Manchester City. I have a feeling we're going to see Kovacic in that role alongside Rodri a few more times between now and the end of the campaign.
Good stuff. The FA Cup semi-finals, about a month away, the 20th and 21st of April. Coventry hosting Man United. Man City taking on Chelsea in the other semi-final as well. We take a break now. When we come back, a bit more European action. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick and mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth. And with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day to day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our weekend review. Let's go to Fulham, who had a 3-0 win over Tottenham. What happened here, Graham?
Yeah, obviously this was an unexpected result, and it didn't flatter Fulham either. They were the stronger team. It was a really flat performance by Spurs, only a week after they went to Villa Park and completely smothered Aston Villa in that game. So that was really weird. And there was just a general vibe of shoulder shrugging from Spurs-associated people after this game, where I think they struggled to come up with an explanation. Postecoglou didn't really seem to have much of an explanation. I think the main reason for this match panning out like this was the way that Fulham set up. They set up to make the most of the wide areas. That's where the overloads were. Fulham wanted to get wide as often as possible. Andreas Pereira was drifting left and right to create those overloads. And then Fulham would double up at the back post when a cross was played in. Anthony Robson had a really good game. It's his deep cross that sets up Rodrigo Muniz for the first goal. And then there's another cross before that, which Muniz could have scored. But then when Fulham were getting wide, they were dragging Spurs out and recognising the space in the middle that had been created. And they were playing in that area as well. And all of a sudden, Tottenham were exposed. So I do wonder, with the way that Tottenham like to send their fullbacks into the middle of the pitch, I'm a little bit surprised that more teams haven't tried to do this, and I do wonder if more teams will replicate this over the next few weeks, exposing those wide areas.
Yeah, yeah. Timo Werner had a point blank miss as well. Very uncharacteristic of him not to put it straight in the back of the net. I thought he's a Ballon d'Or contender, Timo Werner.
What did he do to you? I don't understand. Did he personally offend you? Is that all it is? Ryan also lived and speaks German. Lived in Germany, speaks German. I don't think it can even be the German criticism.
It's not that. I think he's wonderful. I think he's really good. All praise is completely valid.
Yeah. Oh, man. The sarcasm is oozing out of Ryan Bailey.
Yeah, he's great. Burnley 2, Brentford 1. Anybody have Burnley with a home win in their predictions, Graham? Did you? Not me.
No, I think I had this as a draw, I think. This match was low-key pure chaos. Maybe not as chaotic as the FA Cup games that we've seen, but I'll run through quickly some of the things that happened here. Sergio Reguilón, he sent off after just 8 minutes. There was a back pass which had to be scrambled off the line because the Burnley goalkeeper was basically outside his box waiting for a pass. There was an absolute sitter for Dacho Fofana, which, I'll say it, Joe, he should have scored. It's an open goal. He's about 5 yards out. He gets his feet in a mess and scuffs it wide. Then the most chaotic moment was Dacho Fofana hiding behind Flecken, the Brentford goalkeeper, when he puts the ball on the ground. It's like one of those things from a blooper reel where the whole crowd shouts, "He's behind you!" And then he nicks in, and just when you think he's going to put it into the back of the net, he slips when he's about to shoot. So yeah, this match was absolute madness. I don't know how this match pans out if Brentford have 11 men on the pitch, but this result is a lifeline for Burnley. They're still 8 points away from safety, so they've still got a lot of work to do.
Graham, I'm completely numb to the should have scored conversation after this weekend. I don't know who was doing the commentary on the American feed for the Man United-Liverpool FA Cup game, but I think we got that one like 12 times over the course of those 120 minutes. So honestly, there's nothing you can say that will hurt me. I'm completely numb.
We should test that theory out.
What was like a scoop from like 2 yards inside the box? Ugh. Gross.
Yeah,
we joking. Got them, everyone. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, I lied. Finally. I'm not numb. I'm angry. That's my mistake.
Burnley did, interestingly, Vincent Kompany changed his goalkeeper. That seems to have been a thing that supporters were very in favor of, with Trafford coming out and I believe Muric coming in, and they get the win. Graham, to your point, I don't know how much that's that decision versus a red card for the opposition inside of the first 10 minutes or whatever. So, but it's an interesting thing to note as we see Burnley fighting to stay alive.
He looked a lot better than Charlie Trafford, who's really struggled this season. He's got ability, but he's young and he's lightweight, whereas Muric, on the other hand, I think he has presence. He makes a couple of really big saves, including one from Ivan Toney. So I'm not saying starting Muric from the beginning of the season would have completely changed Burnley's season, but maybe that's a few extra points on the board. I expect he'll be keeping that place until the end of May.
So you're not saying it, but you're not saying it, is what I mean.
Exactly.
Okay. We should probably know that Burnley got an even bigger win today with Nottingham Forest points deduction, because they're now not 8 points, Graham, they're 5 points off
of course,
safety. Now with a Nottingham Forest switching places with Luton to drop into the danger zone. Let's go to the Bundesliga, shall we? Darmstadt 2, Bayern Munich 5. Harry Kane doing the goals again. He's now got 31 league goals in a season. That's a personal best for him and a record for the most goals in the Bundesliga. A debut campaign, also clashed with the goalpost and is having his ankle looked at. He's travelled with the England team, but they're going to be looking at him and asking him not to run into any more goalposts.
Yeah, let's hope that's him out of the Euros now. I'm kidding, am I? Who cares? I don't know. But yeah, he was very good in this game. He's very good in this game. This match, though, for me, was all about Jamal Musiala. Another Englishman who's chosen to play for Germany. All of a sudden, he has suddenly found top form. Two goals for him here, and he was everywhere, dribbling through tackles, dropping a shoulder. On paper, he plays off the left side, but you look at his touch map, and he's much more central and running around Kane and linking up around the edge of the box. So yes, very good performance by him. Bayern Munich have to keep him around and build around him because there's a lot of chat about his contract at the moment. He's only got 2 years left on his current deal. City want him. Liverpool want him. Apparently Manchester United want him. Don't go there, Jamal Musiala. But he should be the face of the next gen at Bayern Munich, along with Matthijs Tel, who came off the bench in this game and scored as well. Those are the two youngsters at Bayern that have a lot of promise about them.
There you go. Well, Bayern did close the gap with that win, but Leverkusen extended it to 10 points once again, Joe. 3-2 win for them at Freiburg this weekend. For the first time in Leverkusen's history, say Squawker, they've won 22 games in a single Bundesliga campaign. Not many games. 8 games to go, Joe. Surely it's theirs.
It's feeling more and more like it, not just in the league, but in the Cup and in the Europa League as well. This team just will not lose, and I'll get to this actual game in a second. Graham, you had a piece on is it Karabag, the Azerbaijan club, in the Soccer Dispatch.
They were so close.
Which is great. And Karabag were up 2-0 more than halfway through the second half of their Europa League game in the middle of last week. But Leverkusen just can't lose. Like, they've just adjusted the sliders to make sure that they win regardless of what happens. And they end up winning that game 3-2. Stupid, ridiculous, 93rd minute equalizer, 98th minute winner from Patrick Schick. Ridiculous stuff there from Leverkusen. They were excellent again over the weekend against Freiburg. Just 2 minutes into the game, they show real intent. It's Florian Wirtz with a beautiful right-footed strike to put Leverkusen ahead. But the whole sequence, it's not just the goal, which is beautiful, but it is the whole sequence that leads to the goal that is peak Bayer Leverkusen this season. It's built, everything is built on top of this really sharp switch of play, which has been a real fixture for this team in their 3-4-3 possession shape that Xabi Alonso has been using. The whole sequence starts on a throw-in. On the right side, Leverkusen throw the ball in, and they switch the ball quickly, with purpose, over to Alex Grimaldo on the left side. He pushes forward, eventually Wirtz gets on the ball in the box and does the rest. Everything is calculated. There is still somehow freedom and fluidity underneath that calculated approach. Really, really sharp. Freiburg get back into the game in the 10th minute through Rizzo Duan, but Leverkusen's attack is too strong. They win this thing 3-2. They are really, really, really good. I am breaking no new ground, but I am allowing myself to hope that we might have an undefeated season from Bayer Leverkusen.
Woof. Nice to see. Taylor, Dortmund in the Champions League spots now with a 3-1 win over Frankfurt.
And a little bit of a Champions League hangover for moments of this game. They had a few, characteristically or uncharacteristically, depending on your perspective, sloppy moments, including for the opener in which Hummels and Schlotterbeck both try to make a play on the ball. Neither one does, and then that allows Marmoush to basically dribble 70 yards in on goal without anyone really applying pressure. His shot is saved. Mario Götze then comes through, hits the half volley perfectly into the side netting, does not celebrate against his old team. Then we get Karim Adeyemi getting an equalizer and also does not celebrate at all, which made me eventually have to go and just double check that he had never played for Eintracht Frankfurt, because for a moment I thought he was refusing to celebrate against his old club. Not quite sure why he looks so sad to score. But then Mats Hummels gets the late header to get the lead. Emre Can then gets the penalty to win it 3-1. But the first half of this game was really, really open and very, very fun. It was the first game in a very long time that was on the television here at my house. My wife walked in, watched 5 minutes, and much like I tend to do with Real Housewives show, she then, various episodes of Real Housewives, she kind of like stood and watched for a little bit and then started asking questions and eventually was sitting for the entire first half and watched the whole first half. So it was that appealing that I could pull in my wife, who is otherwise pretty soccer neutral.
Wow. Compelling stuff. Real Housewives comparison.
Exactly.
Expected Real Housewives was high in that one. Very good.
I'll say, if you are a Dortmund supporter, I'm not sure this one gives you a ton of confidence going into the next round of the Champions League and further in the Bundesliga, just because there are moments when they look so sharp and so electric and so solid, and then there were moments in this one where they just looked all over the place and like they couldn't string a pass together. So still a bit disjointed, but they get the win in the end. So that's the positive. And Daniel Malen, I thought this was the best I've seen him look. He just makes really interesting decisions as to when to pass versus when to try to turn and take people on, and for the most part got those decisions right in this game. Has a few mistakes here and there, gets an assist, but I thought it was a pretty impressive performance from him on the right.
I now need to know the reason Adeyemi doesn't celebrate.
It's really strange.
Like, that's just the way my brain works. Yeah. Like maybe he stopped off to use the bathroom once and as a way of saying thanks. Like, I'm not going to celebrate this goal.
In Frankfurt, you mean?
Yeah, in Frankfurt, real quick. Yeah.
It's admittedly a tap-in, and he had missed like one or two chances, and so maybe it's I didn't really earn this one. But it's not even, he doesn't even do like the point to Daniel Malen, who gets the assist. He just kind of stands there, and even in the celebrations, just looks like really like somebody blew out the candles on his birthday cake. He does not look happy to have scored. I'm not quite sure. Maybe he, like Joe, was betting on his own performance.
Maybe just
well, an allegation just casually thrown in there.
The fire truck's on its way, full of lawyers. Maybe just likes hot dogs.
I said maybe.
Sausages. Who knows?
It's fine.
Anywho, let's go to Spain, shall we? Atletico Madrid with a 3-0 home loss at the hands of Barcelona. Atleti's first league defeat at the Wanda Metropolitano in over a year.
That's Graham's fault. Graham cursed them. Graham mentioned that. It's Graham's fault.
Graham, stop cursing people. We've talked about this. You can't be doing that stuff.
Joel, about like 2 minutes ago, you said Leverkusen are on course for an unbeaten season, so we'll see how that pans out.
Did I use the word curse? No.
Okay. Joao Felix isn't cursed, Graham. Scoring against his parent club here. He seems to be some kind of pantomime villain when it comes to Atleti. He loves winding them up, it seems.
I think he's scored 6 league goals this season, and 2 of them have come against Atletico Madrid. Before the game, Atletico Madrid outside the Metropolitano, for anyone who's been, they have like a Hollywood Walk of Fame style thing with former players, and they give them a star or whatever. And on the Joao Felix star outside the stadium, fans had like burning shirts on top of it before the game. So a little bit more than a pantomime villain for them. But in terms of Barcelona's performance, this was good from them. And we're starting to get a point where they have turned a bit of a corner. Kind of weird that Atleti played Barca on the same day at the same time that Inter were playing Napoli, given those two teams played each other in the Champions League during the week. Atleti, just linking it to the Champions League, they looked pretty flat after playing 120 minutes against Inter, and Griezmann started off the bench, and I do think that was a factor in Atleti's performance. I don't think they had recovered well from the Champions League. This match was a bit of a slow burn, but once Barca got going, they were clearly the stronger team. Atleti repeatedly played themselves into trouble. The first 2 goals come from them losing possession high up the pitch, but Barcelona were really incisive in those moments, and that hasn't been the case throughout much of the season. I thought Rafinha was good again, which is really starting to force me to reconsider some things. I thought he was pretty much done as a Barcelona player. I thought he was Barcelona's Antony, but these last few weeks, his movement and the runs he's making, I think they've given Barcelona some fluidity that they didn't have before then. Fermín López was impressive again, backing up from the midfield and getting himself on the score sheet again with those late runs into the box. Ilkay Gundogan, he's held this Barcelona team together at points this season. I think he deserves a little bit more credit. I think Manchester City have missed him in this game as well. He's the one driving it forward like he did for the first goal, but then also also getting back into the defensive shape. But the biggest difference maker for Barcelona was Lewandowski, who looks more like his old self. Again, 7 goals in his last 9 games, but it's not just the finishing, it's those little runs into the wider areas of the box, and then the understanding with Joao Felix, and in this case, it was with Joao Felix, but in the past it's been Lamine Yamal. He is looking, again, more like his old self. So that is a big difference. Also pleased to see Lamine Yamal on the bench for this match, because Barcelona cannot afford to grind his knees into dust like they've done with Pedri. So that is decent management. He only comes off the bench in the second half.
Graham, I thought of you in this game as, I forget which goal it was, that just went slightly over Axel Witsel's head and then was perfectly there to be finished. I thought of you and your, I believe Axel Witsel is one of your players that you have never found impressive. Yeah.
I just don't understand what Axel Witsel is. He's playing centre-back now, but not well, like just because he's there.
I just need that moment of like podcasting from you cut with that slow motion image of him just completely failing to make any contact with the ball as it sails over him and then onto the foot of a Barcelona player. It was a lovely moment if you had nothing at stake in this game.
Discord Squadron, there's a job for you. Okay.
Just very quickly before we move on, a bizarre fact that I read after this match. So Xavi was unhappy with some of the refereeing in this game, which is pretty common for him now, and he was booked. As a player, Xavi Hernandez got 88 yellow cards in 828 games, which is a booking every 9.4 games. As a manager, he's been booked 24 times in 132 games, which is a booking every 5.5 games. So management does weird things to calm people, evidently.
Yeah, that was a stat. Thank you very much, Graham. 4-2 win for Real Madrid.
I thought it was interesting.
And also soon. Arda Güler, the late sub for Real Madrid, Graham, had a shot from beyond the halfway line that hit the bar in this game. That was fun.
Indeed. He almost had his Beckham versus Wimbledon moment, but alas.
So Graham's stat, not good enough, but a shot from midfield that hits the bar must be mentioned. Just want to see where we are on these things.
I wasn't going to say that, Taylor, but...
which is cooler, a number that's slightly different to another number or a shot from the halfway line?
He gets booked more as a manager than as a player.
Ryan,
that is weird.
Ryan, to be clear, you don't want me to answer that.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, can I answer as Joe? Because
it wasn't
on target.
Anyway, let's talk about the game and move on so Joe can talk about some American stuff and MLS stuff. This was a fun match, probably the best I've seen Real Madrid play since the win over Girona last month. Osasuna, they played their part. Lunin had to make a good number of saves, but yeah, the Real Madrid attack was motoring, pretty open game throughout, and that suited them because the number of runners they have. Vinicius was able to get in behind time and time again. Brahim Diaz was excellent once again, scored a lovely goal after racing through from a flick on. Of course, no Bellingham for Real Madrid as he's still suspended from the Valencia game, and that is obviously a blow, but it does allow Real Madrid to set up in a more orthodox 4-3-3 shape with Vinicius and Brahim Diaz switching with one out left and then one through the middle. Thought Fede Valverde was tremendous. Hat-trick assist for him. The Carvajal goal is so pleasing on the eye. There's a bit of juggling between Brahim and Valverde, and then Carvajal's outside of the boot finish was amazing. So yeah, I had a good time watching this performance.
Indeed. A loss for Girona as well this weekend, Graham. They've now lost 4 of their last 6 games. Their title challenge... very much.
Oh, it's done.
Yeah.
We cursed them as well.
Yeah, we did indeed. Just a quick jaunt over to Italy, where Milan had a 3-1 win at Verona. Tio Hernandez, Samuel Chukwueze, and Christian Pulisic with the goals in this one. Pulisic now with 20 goal involvements in his debut season in Italy. That's 12 goals and 8 assists. Brava, grande Christian. Juventus with a 0-0 draw against Genoa here. They've only got 1 win in their last 8 games. They've drawn 3 of their last 5 games. Not sure what's going to happen with Mr. Allegri as this season ends. It doesn't seem like it's going particularly well there, but it's going very well for Daniel De Rossi. A 1-0 win. Oh, go on, Taylor.
I want to know when we're going to get our apology from you all for criticizing the Daniele De Rossi appointment. You all had no faith, and yet here he is, winning games consistently. They're into, what, 5th? Just outside of Champions League places?
I think I said it was fine. I think I said it was like a fine, sensible appointment. I think
that
the take will vindicate me from you all in this conversation.
So there is an instant impact by an interim manager only in place until the end of the season, Taylor, is that correct? You did live through the Solskjaer era, right? Like... at Manchester United.
I didn't care for that.
Excellent stuff.
Yeah, you're very lucky. This is a family-friendly show, Graham. It's all I'm going to say.
I am keeping my powder dry on Daniele De Rossi. Let's see how he's doing in November of next season.
There you go. Roma in fifth, 4 points above Atalanta. That's a big one, as Italy likely to get 5 Champions League places this season. The big Sunday night game in Italy, of course, Inter's game against Napoli, the aforementioned, which was a 1-1 draw in the end. Didn't quite deliver last year's winners versus this year's. The game, Graham, somewhat overshadowed by a controversial incident. Napoli's Juan Jesus accusing Francesco Acerbi of using racist language. Acerbi, just before we came on, I saw that he's agreed to leave Italy's national training camp for this international break as well. No word on an official investigation, but a disappointing incident, it appears.
Yeah, hugely disappointing that this match finishes in that manner. Jesus seemed to confirm this, the incident in his post-match interview. Also said that Acerbi had apologised. I'm not sure if that matters, but here we go again. Barely a weekend passes in Serie A without a racism story. In terms of the match itself, I don't think we saw the best of either team in this game, maybe because of that hangover from the Champions League, which seems to have been applicable for a few teams this weekend. No Osimhen for Napoli, who was rested, according to Calzona. Inter were at full strength in terms of the personnel, but this wasn't a great performance from them. I thought they were pretty disjointed. I thought the midfield seemed quite deep, which was similar to what happened against Atletico Madrid. And that then resulted in a disconnect with Martinez and Thuram as the two attackers. And they were quite far from each other. And it didn't really feel like there was a great deal of cohesion to Inter's attacking play. You still got some Inzaghi ball moments, like Bastoni being in the left wing position to cross for Darmian, the right wing back to finish from the penalty spot in a central area. But it never really felt like Inter built on that, besides a couple half chances for Barella and Martinez. And then some slack defending from a corner 10 minutes from the end gave Juan Jesus the chance to head in the equaliser. That was the first time all season in Serie A that Inter have conceded in the final 15 minutes of a game, which is pretty incredible and underlines how strong they have been this season. But yeah, this wasn't their best performance.
They're the anti-Crystal Palace in that respect, Graham. Very good.
In that respect, yes.
Just in that respect.
It's a weird, respect, but yes, that's great.
Indeed. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got lots of US action to discuss. Coming back shortly.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. Joe Lowry, we come to your MLS corner. Let's start off, shall we, in Chicago, the Fire having a 4-3 win over Montreal. Kellen Acosta with a 99th minute winner here. Now, Joe, in the pantheon of all-time didn't-mean-it goals, how highly does this rank for you, this slightly bizarre winner?
Whatever the highest mark in the pantheon is. So all of you guys saw this, right? I would assume you've all seen this. Listeners, I would imagine a lot of you have seen this as well. I have never seen a goal like this. So let me rewind on the game, first of all, because it was bizarre. So you have Montreal go 2-0 up off of two penalty kicks away in Chicago in the first half. So they're up 2-0. Chicago pull one back right before halftime in the eighth minute of added time in the first half. A ridiculous amount of stoppage time in this match. And then, so you have Montreal go 3-1 up off of a lovely goal, and they're starting to cook a little bit, and it seems like they're going to protect the lead. Hugo Kuipers gets a goal, his first goal in MLS, which is a good moment because they spent a bunch of money on him for Belgium. And then it's 3-3, which is great for them. I missed a Gutierrez penalty kick in there somewhere. So three penalties in this game, 20-plus minutes of stoppage time. And then you get the Kellen Acosta moment. So the ball comes all the way back to Chicago Fire goalkeeper Chris Brady. He passes it forward to Acosta, and everybody's in the attacking half. Like, this is a desperation moment from the Chicago Fire. And Kellen Acosta hits a long ball forward, intending for it to be in the box. Like, you can tell from the positioning of the players and even how hard he hits the ball that he's just trying to get the ball into the mixer, lads. Like, that is the idea. And the wind catches it. There was wind all throughout this game, a ton of it. You could see it in the first half. You could see it in the second half, the way the jerseys were rippling, all that stuff. And the wind catches it and catches it and catches it and catches it. And it keeps going. And it sails over CF Montreal goalkeeper Jonathan Seurat. And it's 4-3. The Chicago Fire win it at the death, at home, finally having something go their way this season. This was a stupid and epic and amazing moment for the Fire. I cannot believe this happened. I've never seen something like it, and I honestly don't think I ever will.
No, I've never seen a goal like this before. Did anyone play Angry Birds when that was a thing?
Absolutely.
In Angry Birds, you used to be able to fire the Angry Birds and then, like, when it's in the air, tap it and it would, like, arrow down into the ground. It's like someone did that to Kellen Acosta's ball. And there's one fan video from behind Kellen Acosta kicking the ball forward. And it just makes clear how wild it is because it's heading kind of out towards the corner flag. Yeah. Like, I don't think it's actually heading into the middle.
It's like kind of out to but it's like almost a little bit of a diagonal towards the right side.
Yeah, and that's where I have some sympathy for the goalkeeper because initially I thought, okay, this is a weird goal, but the goalkeeper's wearing concrete boots there. But not only does it come down like a missile, it swings from right to left. And so I can imagine trying to predict where that ball is going as a goalkeeper was impossible. But honestly, one of the weirdest goals I've ever seen in my life.
That's why they call it the Windy Apple, Graham, Chicago.
Yeah, famously.
Famously so. Joe, how about them Inter Miami's with a 3-1 win in DC? Luis Suarez with a nice chipped goal as the icing on the cake there.
Taylor was right all along. Everyone who doubted Luis Suarez was stupid. And I was not one of those people, to be very clear. But Taylor was first, on, at least among the four of us, on that bandwagon. Luis Suarez comes off the bench, snags two goals for Inter Miami to give them a 3-1 win. Taylor is flexing?
Flexing.
There it is. He was fantastic. Really, really sharp in this game in the second half.
I think it was pretty clear what I was doing.
I thought there was also other stuff going on, so I was a little confused at what was happening in that image. In general, Miami, I thought, were the better team in this game even before Suarez came off the bench. Some refereeing controversy. I mentioned all the stoppage time, and there were other calls in the Chicago-Montreal game that Laurent Courtois, CF Montreal manager, was none too pleased about. Troy Lesane has some reasons to be frustrated. There's a no-call penalty in the first half of this game for DC United. They do take the lead in the first half. It's Jared Stroud with a goal, but they never really get back into this one. Miami, I thought even without Messi, who wasn't playing in this game, and Suarez in the starting lineup, I thought they were solid and showed a lot of what this team can do even when they're going to be missing some of those key players. A better sign for them without some of the big boys in the lineup from the start. DC, though, maybe have some reasons to feel sadness here as well.
Indeed. Joe, what else happened in MLS? Give us a quick roundup.
All right, I'm going to go through as fast as I can. Maybe some reasons to worry for Seattle. They dropped points at home against the Colorado Rapids. I thought there were some good tactical adjustments from Chris Armas in this game. but Seattle continue to miss a bunch of starters and just are really struggling to generate much in the way of attacking chances. That is something to keep our eyes on. The Columbus Crew just don't seem to be all that inclined to stop for anybody. They jack stomp the Red Bulls, who have been one of the best teams in MLS so far this season. They win that game 3-0. They were almost perfect and gave the Red Bulls very, very little going the other way. This team is so good. Jason Russell Rowe, Canadian international, someone to watch. He has been excellent to start the season and is now seemingly in a much bigger role for this team. He snagged the second goal of that match for the Columbus Crew. There are concerns, I think, in Dallas, probably some concerns for Philadelphia, some concerns for LAFC as well. Steve Cherundolo has done this thing this year where they still have two open DP spots, and all of the reporting is sort of like, well, they're kind of just waiting until after the Euros, and maybe they're going to snag Antoine Griezmann and or Olivier Giroud and or somebody else. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but LAFC are struggling to generate consistent chances in the attack. I mean, I think a lot of that's because they're only using two real attackers. It's Denny Bouanga on one side, it's Christian Oliveira on the other, and then it's four midfielders, and two of those four midfielders are defensive midfielders first and foremost. LAFC weren't awful in their 2-0 loss to Eric Ramsey's Minnesota United, but they haven't been as sharp as they were to maybe open the season against Seattle, especially in that first half. And it feels like a lot of this stuff is just very easily solved. LAFC don't have a ton of pre-planned patterns or rotations that they'll use under Cherundolo because that's apparently just not the stuff that he's interested in doing. But if you don't care about doing the detailed possession stuff, at least give your lineup a chance to go out there and create chances on its own. And we're not really seeing that from LAFC. From Minnesota, Eric Ramsey, now youngest coach in the league, former Manchester United assistant. He is, you know, actually on the sidelines now. This was his first game. And I thought the Loons were solid. A little bit of a tweak in their possession shape. We saw more of a 3-2-5 at times. I don't know if that's going to stick or not, but they were fine. They were fine in this game, and they are riding high right now on top of the Western Conference. They're the only team with 10 points over in the West. They have a 3-point lead on the Vancouver Whitecaps. Good stuff from LAFC. From Minnesota United. The last thing I want to mention, and there's plenty more we could mention, but the last thing I want to mention, the LA Galaxy. I don't know if anybody out there watched the Galaxy take on St. Louis City. I don't know if anybody out there has watched a ton of Joseph Painsil so far this season. Outside of having, you know, just a like S-tier first name, obviously, Painsil has been electric this season. I wrote this for Backfield, and I believe it strongly, and I posted it on Twitter as well. Like, Joseph Painsil is inching closer and closer to the best player in Major League Soccer, not named Lionel Messi conversation. I don't think he probably is that player just yet. He scores in this game against St. Louis, which was wild. One of the games of the weekend, regardless of league, ends in a 3-3 draw. He is dangerously close to what Kylian Mbappe is to Liga. Like, he is to MLS, like, really, really, really close to what Kylian Mbappe is to Liga. Just the best athlete on the field at any given time, and has not Mbappe-level technical skill relative to his peers. Like, obviously, doesn't have Mbappe-level technical skill, otherwise he wouldn't be playing for the Galaxy. But, like, he is sharp in the final third. I know Goss has been talking about how mediocre he is in the final third. He's wrong about that. He's excellent in the final third. And he is an incredible athlete, so he gets to the final third more often than basically anybody on the field. He is toying with defenders. Right now, St. Louis had no answers for him on that right side, the left side of their back line. The Galaxy are not only tons of fun, but it looks like they have smashed that signing from Pencil over from Belgium out of the park.
Joe, NWSL kicked off this weekend as well. Of course, the Challenge Cup on Friday. San Diego with a 1-0 win over Gotham in that one. But of course, this weekend we had expansion teams. We had a brand new shiny stadium. Lots of other stuff going on.
Yeah, I'll start with the Challenge Cup. So we've seen this tournament evolve, and we saw it, you know, be like the thing during the pandemic for the NWSL, and then it changed. I don't understand why we're still doing it. Like, I don't know. Maybe this is a cool kind of community shield element. I don't know. It feels weird to have that game on the Friday and have it not count for the regular season standings. I just don't get it. Anyway, San Diego take care of business in that game and get the win, which is, I guess, good for them. In the actual regular season kickoff, Saturday started off with a bang. A 9-goal match between the Kansas City Current at their brand new stadium. 11,500 people in attendance. Cutaways to the Mahomes. All that stuff. It checked all the boxes. Against the Portland Thorns, who scored 4 goals. Sophia Smith had a brace, and a really, really nice brace at that. The Current were brilliant in front of their home fans, scoring 5 goals in the first 68 minutes of this game. Alex Pfeiffer became the youngest NWSL goal scorer in regular season history. So many things to like for the Current. They're not going to score 5 goals every single game. But if you're talking about a way to kick off a regular season as a league with this game on ABC across the United States, like over-the-air television, 5-goal thriller at home at a brand new shiny stadium with a great camera angle, I was genuinely impressed with the Current. You know, you're going to give up goals to the Thorns because they're fantastic in the attack, even though they weren't to start this game, by the way. But man, Kansas City, Bia at the top of their attacking shape under Vlatko and Danowski was really sharp. She scores a goal in this game and comes off at halftime. There was a lot to like for the Current, more than I thought there would be coming into this weekend. Good stuff there from Kansas City. North Carolina dropped 5 goals on the Houston Dash. Houston undergoing a bit of a transition. North Carolina as well. But they were fairly sharp in this game. We saw Ashley Sanchez and Brianna Pinto sort of as like a fluid front two in what looked at times like a 4-triple-2 from Sean Nejas. They were clinical in the final third. They had some nice buildup through Ashley Sanchez in the attacking half of the field. I liked what I saw from the Courage, much less so from the Houston Dash. And then the last note on the NWSL, and what was a very, very fun weekend of games, the expansion teams. Utah Royals lose 2-0 at home to the Chicago Red Stars. I thought Utah was actually probably the better team on the day. They created more chances. They had more of the ball. They were in control of a lot of this game. The finishing wasn't quite there. I don't know that we learned a ton about this team moving forward, especially because I'm not sure there are many folks out there who have really high expectations for the Red Stars. So something to watch for, just to see how this Utah team continues to take shape under Amy Rodriguez. And then Bay FC, they won their opener against Angel City. Asisat Oshawala had the opener and the only goal of this game in the 17th minute. They didn't really hit their super possession-y, in-control style. They score off of a high-pressing moment, which is going to be a part of their game model. It's a nice finish and a nice bit of pressing from them against Angel City in the attacking third. We didn't see, and Albertine Montoya talked about this after the game, we didn't quite see the style that they want to play. I would imagine that will come with time. They're trying to figure out exactly who they are and who their teammates are. So to pick up 3 points to kick off your season, even in a not entirely stellar performance, Angel City, I thought, had a lot of things going for them in this game. I like the center back pairing of Sarah Gordon and Paige Nielsen. And I like some of the midfield play as well. They had a youngster, Kennedy Fuller, in their midfield. So some things to like for Angel City, but Bay FC coming away with 3 points in their first ever game.
Joe, just to take us quickly back to the KC, their new stadium. Yeah. I thought it looked tremendous.
It looks
first of
so
all,
good.
Big TIFOs, it looks fantastic. But my favorite feature about that stadium that I saw reported over the weekend is after they score a goal, and keep in mind they did this 5 times on Saturday, they have like a train horn or something as part of their celebrations. The train horn, the thing that makes the noise, has been placed behind the last row of the away section, which is just incredible trolling, and I am very much here for that.
That is so I watched that game on mute, no surprise there. So I didn't catch the train horn. That is unbelievably and deliciously petty, Greg. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
I bet those away fans wish they could have watched this game on mute as well, given how many times that horn went off.
That tracks. Yes, that tracks.
Is Kansas City known for its trains or its train horns?
I'm not sure.
Don't know, but counterpoint, Ryan, funny, as Graham often says. So yeah, irrelevant, actually.
Very good stuff. One more note from me with American interest. PSV undefeated, still in the Eredivisie, the 23rd win of the season on Sunday. Over a 20, a 1-0 win here. The 96th minute goal coming from Ricardo Pepe, set up by Malik Tillman. Yay! That happened. Cool. Great.
Go USA.
Let's do that. Let's go USA.
It means more because the non-Americans said it.
One more thing we should probably note. Headlines coming out of the Turkish League this weekend. Trabzonspor fans coming onto the field and attack some Fenerbahce players after a Super League match on Sunday, which Fenerbahce won 3-2. Trabzon players were met with violence while celebrating the victory. Gianni Infantino, Taylor, says that was absolutely unacceptable. There was some pretty rough scenes on the field there.
Gianni Infantino waited in on that one? All right, good for
him. He did, yeah.
Way to take a stand, big guy.
Yeah. He said things that were violent were bad, is what he said. So he was pretty insightful.
So this is one of the situations in which the team that won away is celebrating on the field, and the home fans then take that as a shot. Yeah, that feels a little bit silly. I understand frustration. I understand a feeling of, like, maybe your ground is being disrespected, but it's not even a, like, running to the Dallas Cowboys star and, like, spiking the ball on it and celebrating in that way that is a deliberate shot. It's more so, we won the game. We played well. We're happy. And I think, yeah, the resulting scenes, the overall lack of security, and it felt like they didn't even really get the tunnel security even after the players got down it. And you could see a few players sort of having to be escorted through the crush in somewhat hidden fashion. Not a great look for Turkish football. Not a great look for Trabzonspor.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. But a great look for the weekend review, Taylor, because we've nailed it this week. Thank you very much indeed, Taylor.
Thank you, my friend. I did hear some reporting that most of the fan unrest was because Ryan Bailey was not performing live, and they felt like that was a thing that was going to happen. When it didn't, the agitation ratcheted.
That's the next season of Challenge Ryan. Turkey edition.
I can understand. It's an epidemic, Taylor. It's the demand is growing. All I can say. That's all I can say. But Taylor, thank you very much once again. Joe Lowry, a pleasure as always, my good man. Thank you, sir.
The pleasure was all mine, Ryan.
And Graham Ruthven, keep on trucking, baby.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
And thank you, listener, for joining us on this one. We'll be back on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye.